You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 9th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's casual Friday, folks. I think I have a sty in my eye. Some type of, it's either that or pink eye. That's how casual we are today. I may do this with one eye open. It's Friday. You know what that means. Cliff Schechter will be joining us to go over the week in review, a crazy week, and a breaking story taking place as I speak. We'll get to that in a moment. And then joining us to provide, hopefully, some type of movie recommendation, also talk about his next project, Pete Dominic. He's had multiple shows on Sirius XM, probably more shows on Sirius XM than I did on Air America, which is pretty stunning. And he's now a program director of a channel there. And so this is my opportunity to try and pitch myself to him. Also a comedian, funny guy. And also, I frankly, he's good with policy, too. Also on the program today, French police have stormed two separate sites. One where the attackers on Charlie Hebdo were holed up, and I guess presumably had at least one hostage. And then a second site in where two other individuals, or at least one other individual, had taken other hostages in support of the first guys. So those were the first guys were the brothers who allegedly attacked Charlie Hebdo. The second site was a kosher supermarket in northern Paris, right? And hostage takers had taken hostages in that market, basically threatening to kill hostages in the event that French police stormed the first site to get the first two brothers who had attacked, allegedly, Charlie Hebdo. Apparently now there are three hostage takers who are killed. The fourth, presumably or allegedly a woman, is – I've seen no reports. I presume that she is alive. Some hostages, according to French authorities, are killed. Seeing reports of four hostages dead, unconfirmed. So, you know, of course, as these things develop, information is sketchy. But Cliff and I will talk about the impact, I think, of this. At least I don't know that we can speak too well as to the impact on French politics, although we certainly can speak to the potential dangers. But we will talk about that. I do have an email from a listener Hey, guys, I have a question for you. This is from listener Matt. As a result of the recent attack in France, a number of artists have begun drawing depictions of Muhammad as a protest of sorts. But I wonder if it is an effective form of protest. It's not only radical Muslims who are offended by such depictions, and given that the drawings are quite often a little more than Arab stereotypes, I can't certainly say that I'm happy with them either. It seems to me that by drawing a Muhammad, the whole Muslim community is being attacked, not just the extremists, and in doing so, they are just further isolating an already isolated community, which can only lead to more resentment and distrust. I was hoping I'd get your thoughts on this. Also, I want to let you know, guys know that you really do a great show. Only been a member for a month, but the fee was worth every penny. Well, thank you for that, Matt. Cliff and I are going to talk about this. The one thing that I have been struck by is this sense that every outlet needs to, in some way, is obligated as a show of support of, I guess, journalistic freedom to replay or to reproduce or to republish the cartoons that Charlie Hebdo did. And it, and to my mind, I mean, look, without taking, I haven't even seen most of them. Do I find them offensive? No, I find nothing offensive. But I don't understand what this compulsion is, or this sort of like moral indignation on media outlets that are not reproducing this stuff. If these were Nazis marching in Skokie and a Nazi got shot, I could still defend their right to march and not have to display a swastika. I mean, and that's an extreme version of that, obviously, and I'm not comparing pictures of Muhammad or, frankly, or pictures, you know, I guess they've got, you know, pictures, I don't know, of God. Yes, I mean, of God mounting Jesus and Jesus being mounted by, I mean, look,
the
here's
French
the bottom
are not
line.
So funny.
I mean, here's the, you know, we wouldn't see this if it was like the a comedic depiction of rape, let's say. Okay? And I don't think anybody would argue that someone should be shot because of a comedic depiction of rape. But I also don't think that people, in the event that someone was, that people then would say, like, I'm compelled now to put up that comedic depiction of rape to prove that there should be freedom of the press. So, I mean, that's just my take on it. We'll talk to Cliff about this as well. And I wanted to mention one more thing. A listener of this program, long-term listener of this program, Richard Champion, who is who's been involved in local politics in Washington State for some time, ran for a state Senate seat. He lost, but apparently, I believe the victor just passed away, and Governor Jay Inslee is going to appoint someone to fill that spot in the state house. And there are, I think, two or three people in consideration. One of them is Richard Champion. If you are from Washington State, I would encourage you to go to majority.fm, click on the link, and contact Jay Inslee and show your support. And even if you're from outside of state, I don't think it would hurt. So we have that link at majority.fm. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Cliff Schechter in just a moment. All right. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday, the first Friday that we are live in 2015. What better way to celebrate this first Friday in 2015 like we do almost every other Friday for the past 5 years? 4 years. And that is to first play this.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schachter. How are you, Cliff?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Hold on 1 second. Let me just, there you go. Sorry about that. Great to talk to you. I hope you had a happy new year.
Yes. Happy, healthy, something else that starts with H, probably, I can't think of.
Hearty?
Hearty. Yes, there we go. A hearty new year. Yeah, no, everything was great. How about for you?
Everything went well. It was fortunately very quiet. No kids actually vomited en route to visit the in-laws. They attempted to actually three times in the car ride.
They tried to puke three times?
Huh? We had to pull over three times en route to the airport leaving New York because Mila thought she was going to throw up.
Anybody actually get anything out or
nope.
A lot of dry heaving?
Nope. It was a lot of dry heaving. So that was fun. Let's jump right into this week, Cliff. We're going to have to do away with the niceties because this has been a very busy week, both in terms of the news that is going on in France, but also we saw the beginning of the 114th Congress. We saw new initiatives again, or continued initiatives by President Obama. We had the announcement of a retirement by Barbara Boxer yesterday. We had already one instance of the Democrats actually doing something that we can applaud, which is, you know, we're
ending
at least
up to the gutting of Dodd-Frank.
Indeed.
Although there were 35 of them, we may have to read their names out at the end and ring a bell for each of them, who, of course, sold out and joined in with the Republicans. But we did beat them, and that's what matters.
Indeed. All right. Well, let's start first. I guess we should start in France. As we speak, French television is reporting that three hostage takers have been killed. I've seen reports of four hostages killed. We have two of those hostage takers were suspects in the Charlie Hebdo massacre, really.
Yes.
And the other two hostage takers were suspects in the killing of a policewoman later that same day. Of those two hostage takers, one was a man, one was a woman. The man is dead, reportedly. There were four hostages killed. The second hostage scene was a kosher grocery store in the sort of northern parts of the outskirts of Paris. So you know, this is there's so many different issues here. We're watching the right use this as another way of saying, well, of attacking President Obama, if. Of course, and this notion—
He's somehow to blame for this. I can't figure out how, but he's black, so he must have had something to do with it.
Well, I mean, look, we've seen everybody use this. We saw Hayden get in front of Congress, was it yesterday, and basically say, like, those huge databases of information don't look so scary now. I mean, look, let's put this in perspective for a minute, okay? Obviously, this is a horrible attack. Maybe 20 people now have died, if you include the hostages and the police officer, the policewoman, and the 12 who were killed in the Hebdo attack. This is not an existential threat to France. The reaction may be more of a threat to France, well, not as a nation even then, but in terms of French society. And
well, the question – let me let you finish.
Well, and the idea that, like, look, you know – This attack puts us somewhere between, Aurora and Newtown, right? I mean, let's be honest here about what's going on here. It is scary, presumably, because the intent is grounded in some type of political ideology. We call it terrorism. But from an existential standpoint, this threat is... particularly more significant from an existential standpoint.
Right. There's a couple things going on here. I mean, as there are with these kinds of things, a number of things. One of them is, France, could this be sort of an effect on the French psyche, like what 9/11 was here? It could be, because we had ours, and this happened in England and both England and Spain. Nothing of this size, close to the size that I can recall, has happened in France with this kind of thing. And there's a lot more immigration to France from Muslim countries than there has been here in terms of as a percentage of the population. And so that's how the French react to this. If there's the kind of, no pun intended, overkill that there was here after 9/11. When I say that, let me be very clear, because I'm not trying to say, I mean, what happened in is despicable and it is terrible. You know, I spent some time living in the south of France, so I happen to really enjoy the country. I have friends there, which my connection to it, the country emotionally, makes me even more angry and upset about it. But in general, you know, the whole point, what I would say to someone like, you know, Michael Hayden is, you know, which I think I tweeted out after it, it's the exact reason that I believe we need to have the rule of law in place and have such strong laws are these types of circumstances. Because it's the kind of thing that enrages me to the point where I'd love to get alone in a room with one of these guys and beat them to death, quite frankly, for what they did. And the state, though, is supposed to control people's tempers, and we're supposed to overcome emotion through having laws. So it's not the rule of men or women. It's the rule of law. And, you know, this is not, as you said, this is not existential. It's a terrible thing, but it's not something that's occurring on a daily basis there. You know, sadly, as you pointed out, unless it's Newtown or Aurora, you know, or something like that, most people, beyond four or five of the incidents that have occurred in this country with mass shootings or mass attacks, can't name them because there have been so many, because they're in the hundreds, if not thousands at this point. And of course, the right immediately use this to go to be racist and go after immigrants, because it's all of their faults, except for their ancestors, of course, whoever was saying it, who must have been model immigrants unlike everybody else. They use it immediately to say, see, French gun control laws, you know, French gun laws don't work, as if, you know, the fact that the police arrived there and were shocked that with the weaponry these guys had and by the carnage tells you that actually it does work. You see, we don't have 12-year-olds in France who have toy guns and then get shot because, you know, police immediately assume that in this country, when you arrive on any scene of any petty larceny, robbery or anything, the person will be armed. So right away, we're in a potential hostage situation. I mean, it's terrible that there's a black market and these guys got their guns, but that's the way it tends to work in societies that are regulated well, which is only those who have international connections and the kind of money that can do this, mafia groups and terrorists, tend to be able to get their hands on this kind of weaponry. Your petty criminal, your angry husband, your whatever, cannot. And that saves so many more lives when analyzed versus what just happened there. So it's the usual right-wingers hiding underneath their beds, scared of everything, and saying, let's just give everybody guns, torture all the bad guys, throw the rule of law out the window. Oh, by the way, I'm a constitutional conservative. So we need to keep in perspective, you know, that this has been, especially as it's dragged out now over a couple of days, an additional attack. It has been a terrible occurrence, and we need to be there for our allies and our friends and to do whatever we can we also need to keep in mind, again, that the emotional reaction will be much stronger than the reality of the fact that you're still very unlikely to ever witness or be a victim of any kind of incident like this in France. You know, it is minuscule, your percentage, versus having that happen here because of our gun laws and because of what we do here when it comes to these kinds of things, walking in a mall or going to school or doing any of other dozen things you do in your average day.
I think it's going to be used, I mean, certainly on the right as, you know, as another scare. I don't know that it's going to work in this country, but
I don't worry here. I worry in France.
Right.
I mean, that's what I worry about.
National Front.
In Western Europe in general.
Exactly. And, I'm not convinced that here it's not going to somehow get into our politics. I mean, sort of seeing it, you know, like de Blasio. I mean, this, even with the cops that's going on here, I don't think it's working very well. But, you know, this is the go-to when they run out of stuff. You get Lindsey Graham, for instance, was on. Do we have that? We don't have that. Any of that sound?
God, can he just shut up?
Unbelievable.
He's talking out there about everything. I mean, he's a freaking danger to national security. His mouth. I mean, if he could just shut up for a moment, you know, I mean, he's either talking about this or he's coming right out of the gate attacking the Democratic Party. I saw something that was written the other day blaming the Democrats for the obstruction that went on before. I mean, he just, you know, I guess
they're going to seize on this big time because they don't have much else going on. But the other aspect I want to talk about this, and we should also say that I'm not sure about this, but I'm seeing some reports of perhaps a third hostage situation in progress in France. I'm not sure about that.
They've killed the other ones, it seems, from what I'm popping up right now. It seems like they've now killed.
Yes, both those two hostage situations are finished, but I'm now seeing perhaps there could be reports of a third. I'm not sure. But these guys are checking it out right now. But no, okay. Well, we'll see. But the other aspect I want to touch on is that notion of like this sense somehow in the media and some places in the media that if you don't reprint these offensive am I offended? No, I'm not. But, you know, I don't care if I see the religious figures. There's really nothing that offends me. So
no,
I'm not
me
personally
either.
Offended by any of it. I don't care if it's, you know, Moses. I don't care if it's, you know, me picking up a shekel. Somebody has done a parody of me.
Right.
I don't care. I just don't care. You know, just spell my name right, link back to the
site.
I
would like that, by the way, please.
I've got a picture here of Sam picking up a shekel.
But there's this compulsion to reprint these pictures because somehow this is a defense of the freedom of press. And I just want to clarify something I said yesterday. Somebody asked me about this on Twitter. I don't think, and I think, frankly, the fact that this second group of hostage takers, even if they did it in response to like, oh, our buddies are in trouble, let's go out and take some hostages as an attempt to basically either go down in a blaze of glory or to help them. The fact that they went to a kosher supermarket, I think, is indicative of the point I'm trying to make. I don't think these two brothers, and we'll never know, they're dead now. I don't think that that they attacked Charlie Hebdo because they wanted to chill freedom of the press. I just think that Charlie Hebdo became a convenient target because they had had printed these things, and they became a convenient target in the way that like a kosher supermarket is. They're just on the list, and they would be a soft target, and that's basically it. That it could have been other places like a kosher supermarket,
right?
For instance, and so I it may have been a twofer for them, but I think the bottom line is these terrorists wanted to attack, wanted to some place to attack in society. You attack a magazine that is simply a French, you know, considered a non-Jewish magazine. Then you don't run into that problem of like of it only offending Jews in France, I guess. You know, I'm speaking in very broad terms here. But from a strategic standpoint, this was a good way to achieve, I think, some measure of polarization, which is what terrorism is supposed to do. I mean, that's why
I mean, and then what they're hoping is exactly some of it's happened, not fully, but they want mosques to be burned and innocent Muslims to be attacked so they can set a kind of Muslims against, you know, Christians and Jews. I mean, that's what these radical nuts are trying to do, clearly. That's their aim. And they've said this out loud for a long time now, right? I mean, that's what they're looking for. I think there's two lines of liberal thought on these cartoons, and I may have the less popular one, which I'm willing to defend, which is, you know, there's some people who say, well, freedom of speech, of course, we protect it, but these cartoons were horrible and they were racist. Now, I haven't seen all of them, so I'll start by saying some of them may have been racist. But the one that I have seen, which is the one that showed Muslims cutting off the Prophet Muhammad's head, as in, you know, this is what you've done to Islam. Well, plenty of times people have said, you know, I mean, we all have, if you're on Twitter maybe or in the past you've like going to progressive blogs, you know, you've probably seen, what is his name, General J.C. Patriot, you know, mm-hmm. our friend who does all that. And I fully support that in the same way. And I see this in that, the way people proclaim that they're Christian and don't have the slightest understanding of what Jesus actually said and seriously seem to have not read any of the book that they claim to revere, kind of like with the Constitution. It's the same thing here. Because for a long time, people don't realize that the most stable and peaceful for societies, I mean, you think about the center almost of thought in the, you know, 1,000 years ago, was the Muslim world, you know, and in part of Spain and other places, you know, was it Cordoba, you know? So, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say here is you've got a number of countries now that are ruled that are theocracies. They are Muslim theocracies, all right? Women are treated horribly. Gays are treated horribly. Liberal thought is treated horribly. And when I say treated horribly, I mean killed, tortured. And so I don't see this as picking on a powerless minority. Some people say, well, they are in France, and that may be true, but I don't think that the point of these cartoons, at least the one I saw, was to go after that minority in France. It was to go after the ones, you know, internationally who are doing the kinds of things we're talking about. And to me, is this no different than what crazy right-wing Christians have done, what the Ku Klux Klan has done in the name of Christianity, which is to murder people. And I like it when people mock them. I do it a lot. So that I guess, is where I disagree with some people who've immediately called out and said, you know, as in any of this, it is racist. There are elements of it, I'm sure that are, and I haven't seen all the cartoons again, so there may be ones that are more explicitly racist than the one that I saw. But the one that I saw, to me, makes the kind of point about people taking what Muhammad said and completely using it for their own purposes, like people in this country and other countries have done with Jesus, like radical Jews have done, who have you know, set up settlements on the West Bank and other places, who attacked and killed Seth Rabin. You know, and I think it is very important to call out radical theocracy wherever you see it. So, you know, that is the side of this, I guess, where I come down on, and not everybody agrees with me on that.
Yeah, I mean, but I haven't seen this stuff, but I mean, look, it is every day in this country, and I think I feel like it was Robert Wright. Was it Robert Wright? Who had a piece about this that is
it was Robert Wright.
Who had a piece about this, made the point that, like, look, every day editors in this country of newspapers delete stuff, shoot down pictures and this and that because it's going to be offensive to one group or another group. And I can assure you it's rarely a minority group that they are that they're striking this stuff down because it's going to be offensive to. So, you know, I don't know. I think that's a very good point.
But where I would disagree with him is major corporate mainstream media outlets do that who are worried about their bottom line and losing advertising. But there's plenty of other outlets, as we all know. This is one of the reasons the progressive blogs originally rose, you know, out of nowhere in the early 2000s, is because of what corporate media would allow and wouldn't allow. And I've had plenty of friends who now write for places that didn't exist, that aren't corporate media, but get a million hits a day or whatever it is, that have not been scared to do this kind of thing, and our government hasn't stepped in and arrested them. Whereas I'm looking at somebody right now, you know, I don't know if it was a Huffington Post or whatever in front of me, who blasphemed, you know, said something negative about Saudi Arabia and got 50 public lashes for it. That's what my problem is. And I still think in the end, it's not to say that there isn't a corporate media in this country that censors things. Of course there is. Why are you and I talking on this show? Right? I mean, there very clearly is a corporate media that does that. But it's, to me, it's more the more kind of, you know, the satirists, the more kind of marginalized that aren't maybe part of the corporate media are allowed to do their thing and do their thing without worrying about being killed. You know, I mean, the guys from South Park aren't the corporate media. Yes, I guess they work for a big corporation in their what they created. But when they put out something like the Book of Mormon, are we scared that a bunch of Mormons in this country are going to go kill somebody? They seem to have taken it in stride. They even seem to actually have used it for promotion for their religion. You know, I'm just saying that I'm not taking the Bill Maher view of this, to be clear. I think there's nuance between where Bill Maher is and somebody absolutely on the other side who says, you know, it's I mean, because I can't accept it to go after anybody who happens to not be white and Christian is racist. There are times we need to. Now, if that same newspaper had been making fun of African Americans or making fun of some other group that isn't that at this point doesn't have about 15 religious theocracies around the world and isn't doing what these guys have done, these particular theocracies, not every member of that group, to be very clear, then I would say that is by definition racist, because what have they done? But there is a very good reason right now to be challenging Saudi Arabia's of the world.
Well, yes, I know, but I think we're conflating certain things here, and I don't know. I mean, you know, because I'm talking in a vacuum, but my point earlier
it's hard, I know. Look, they run into each other.
Right.
Well, let you talk.
I mean, no, but I mean, but you know, we wouldn't be reprinting, let's say, these cartoons if it depicted a rape, right? We would simply say it's wrong to kill somebody who is, you know, putting on their cover of their magazine stuff that I find offensive. But we certainly wouldn't be running around, you know, we could still say
not.
that was misogynist. Now, I don't know, you know, like, I you know.
One cartoon I saw, I think, made a very good point. If somebody was just putting out racist cartoons about Muslims and making, you know, it's sort of the equivalent of the hook-nosed Jew, you know, or the large-lipped African-American or whatever other stereotypes have been used as racist tropes through our history, if that's all it was, absolutely. I'd say they have the right to do it, but it's despicable and I wouldn't share it. But to me, the one cartoon I saw and the way that they had these guys doing to Muhammad what they've done to others – in other words, they're doing this to their own religion, I thought that was a very important point to make, that the theocrats are doing that to their own religion. And I didn't think that
was great. I don't know. I guess I've seen other things that were sort of more generally a Muslim attacking. But I mean, I guess, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, those I have a problem with. I haven't seen them, but if those exist, to be very clear, I wouldn't share those. I have a problem with those. I would say they have every right to produce them, but they're in bad taste, and I wouldn't share them. That's what I would say about those.
All right. Well, let's move on, because we've got a couple other things to talk about. A lot of stuff happening in this country. Obviously, the 114th Congress got sworn in this week.
Talking about theocrats.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, we had one thing to sort of like, you know, there's a couple of things to cheer this week in terms of, you know, this ongoing dynamic. I think one thing that's clear is that I don't think she's running. We've talked about this. But Elizabeth Warren is having impact. She's having impact.
She's having an amazing impact.
Just tell, you know, remind people. I mean, I think we mentioned it earlier in the week, but there was a vote basically that had suspended the rules so that the Congress could vote on rolling back a particular part of Dodd-Frank, specifically the Volcker rule, and it failed.
That's right. And she again stood up. you know, as she has done in the past when she said she was going to break Citigroup. I'm combining News Corp and Citigroup, but that she's going to break them up piece by piece, which to me was the closest any politician has come to the kind of rhetoric that you heard from both Roosevelts in recent years, you know. And some of this rhetoric, ironically, or maybe not ironically, I don't know how we want to look at it, but losing Mario Cuomo over the last week, he was sort of one of the last major national figures that got up and spoke like this. This is what I try to sort of say to people so often, that I think sometimes gets lost when, you know, and that this is some of my criticism of those who would say, you know, Obama had a hostile Congress and he couldn't do anything. And I've started to say to people, you're forgetting the power of speech. You're forgetting the power of getting up and persuading, of being a charismatic figure who is passionate and has something to say, and how that can often change an entire dynamic around something. It is still that important. It's even more important with a mass media today that can echo that sentiment again and again and again. And yeah, they are trying to gut Dodd-Frank, and as you pointed out, the Volcker Rule, and they lost. Mm. And yes, there are, as I pointed out, I guess 35 Democrats who crossed over, most of the usual suspects on the New Democrat list. There were a couple shocking surprises who I don't know why. And I'd like to hear why, but most of them were the ones if you follow this stuff closely enough, you come to expect. But it still is an amazing thing, and it shows the ability she's had to frame these issues. I think we're going to see some more of this with the trade deal coming up.
That's going to be huge.
Sherrod Brown, yeah. You know, and she'll probably join on those too, but Sherrod Brown has been the passionate voice on that issue and in the past. Certainly has made them have to work much harder. He did back even as a congressman in the Clinton administration when they were pushing some of the trade deals. Now as a senator with something as big as this coming along, he could become a huge voice. You know, Bernie Sanders now, who's going to run a presidential campaign, just to have him out there every day banging on this drum about how the middle class has been ignored by this economy. These are all enormous. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, I think, has the biggest voice right now, but let's not even say just one of them. Every individual voice, and that's why people who care about this stuff on the left need to be looking at every congressional opportunity in 2016, need to be looking at all these Senate races, because I'll tell you, you know, if it's a Rob Portman here in Ohio or a Mark Kirk in Illinois or Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania or Ron Johnson in Wisconsin or Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire, and I can go on, these are all places that can elect a progressive Democrat. If we allow it to become a pro-Wall Street moderate Democrat from any of those places, we're wasting an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the we're dealing with smaller numbers, obviously, in the Senate and in the House. But it is a more left leaning caucus in both places.
Yeah, I look at it as we cut the fat off. If we're going to lose the way we lost, at least we got rid of the John Barrows,
right. You
know, and we got rid of the Mary Landrews and people like that. And now it's the time to start building from the base. You know, now Joe Manchin and Claire McCaskill are both talking about running for governor and leaving good. Get lost, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, we should build from the base of changing the culture back in the Democratic Party too. If you're not for certain things, if you're not for equality, if you're not for the middle class, if you're not standing up for what this party was based around, then you're not a Democrat, which I think, who said the other day, Representative Capuano from Massachusetts, basically it seems like started a war by saying that the Democrats who supported rolling back Dodd-Frank regulation should call themselves what they really are, Republicans. I mean, the fact that we have Democrats speaking out that way now, to taking the party back, you can feel that the momentum is headed in that direction. And every individual voice matters, and you add a couple more to the groups that are there in 2016, and you keep building in that direction, we'll get there, because that's where the American public is. And so Warren's voice is at this time, I can't even say how incredibly important her voice has been after after the butt kicking we got. I think it's probably in some ways, although he'd probably never admit it, led the president to be more progressive on things like coming out now. It's given him a left flank so he can come out and support 2 years of free community college, which he came out for under certain circumstances, and Cuba lifting the embargo, although it helps on that issue that there's some farm state Republicans who are in favor of that too. But still, some of these things, you know, having a left flank, a progressive, passionate, charismatic left flank is enormously helpful.
I mean, let's talk about that community college thing, because this is sort of a, you know, I would certainly imagine that Elizabeth Warren out there has made it easier for the president on some level. But it definitely feels like, you know, I guess it's possible that 6 months ago they were going like, we're going to hit this community college initiative really hard come January. But frankly, I'm quite convinced that they are now like in the improvisation mode on some level, like where they've been surprised at how little pushback they have gotten. You know, I mean, the president has done a lot of things via executive action over the past 2 months. I mean, that's all we're talking about, right? From the election, November 4th or so, it's now January 9th. I mean, yes. In 2 months, we have basically a deal with China on climate change that he managed to swing without getting Senate approval. We have executive action on immigration, on relations with Cuba. We have, I feel like I'm missing one, but now this community college.
There's the global warming addressing climate change and talks with China, and some of that has been moving in a forward direction.
Right.
Also, and some of the EPA rules also in that direction.
He's made it clear that he is at the very least going to veto any bill that goes around him on Keystone XL, but I think he's also not going to permit Keystone XL. It looks like that.
That's right.
And I think, you know, I mean, all
and,
these.
And let me throw out, you know, one more, which, again, I've talked about on this show, and, you know, I always disclose stuff. I've done work on this with Nick Hanauer, who some people know who Nick is.
The overtime thing, right.
Yeah, the overtime. I mean, it's hugely because, you know, Greg Sargent just wrote this up in the Washington Post 2 days ago, that we've taken that from being something where it was expected that President Obama was going to take somewhat of a corporate position and only up this a little bit to where it was now Greg Sargent called it in his piece, a battle within the Democratic Party between the liberals and moderates. And Sherrod Brown has now, again, come out forthrightly on this. Jared Bernstein, you know, the liberal economist, was under Biden, mm-hmm. and the Obama administration has come out on this, and you're now seeing an enormous amount of pushback saying this is something you can do with a signature, you know, and you're seeing it on this the same way you're seeing it on – you saw it on Keystone, and it made a difference on Keystone. And we've got a month until the overtime decision is made, but, you know, 10 million people and a stimulus and helping the middle class. I'm just saying you're seeing the liberal wing of the party supported by activist groups, you know, progressive media and others flex its muscles right now. And I'm not saying we're anywhere near where we want to be, but let's be honest that this is a very different place from where we were even 5 years ago.
Trending in the right direction, as I feel that you and I have done for 2015. To launch 2015, Cliff, I feel like we're sending we have started 2015 off in the right direction. That's what it's all about, folks. It's all about trends.
It's all about trends and numbers, man, stats, and I will apologize to the listeners for being about 5 minutes late.
That's all right. They didn't know.
That was all me, folks. I'm sorry, here and there. You know.
Cliff, as always, wonderful to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week. I won't be here. I'm actually getting a colonoscopy next Friday.
And you're not doing like a Katie Kirk and letting us all watch?
You know, I've actually done that before.
So while
you let us all watch
back in my Break Room Live days, I did. I didn't do it live, but
we're doing it live. That's a Bill O'Reilly.
Maybe we'll run that video on the front. Yeah, I don't know if we will. Maybe I don't know if I want to dig it up.
It's a little disturbing.
It is a little bit disturbing.
While Sam is screaming his doctor's name in ecstasy, I'll be talking to you next week, Cliff.
I look forward to it. How many of these things have you had, Sam?
This is my second.
A decade of them for you?
This is my second. There's a little bit of hereditary.
family history. Thing.
Yeah, and
being in my early 40s, I had a nightmare. They would start for me at 40, but they said when I hit 40, they were like, "Nope, you're because you have no family history. You probably get to go to 50."
Oh yeah, well,
your family sucks so much.
I had
Sam.
No such luck, but I got to say, there's nothing better than Demerol.
You should get a good ad on this show from that. Now.
I'm going to work on it.
If that's not an endorsement, I don't know what is.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
take care,
man.
Guys.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be welcoming Pete Dominic, I think, on the show for the first time. I don't know if that's possible. But all right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Driving on night, you could be a shadow. Driving on 9, I sure miss you. Pass the motel, looking at the pines. Driving on 9, looking for 1:30. Maybe I passed it. Going up.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Folks, on the phone, it is a pleasure to welcome, I think we've confirmed for the first time on this program. I feel like you were back on the Air America version, Pete, but maybe I'm wrong. Pete Dominic, the creator and the morning host on Sirius XM Insight. Welcome to the program, Pete.
I've never been on a show you've hosted, but I've always been a listener and a fan. And my favorite thing is, I think, something that you used to do, though, which had nothing to do with your show, is when you would call and record your calls to right-wing crazies.
Yes.
And I would give anything for – I would pay good money if you released those in an archive.
Bingo. We just – we're going to do it. We're always
Are you really?
Looking for – I mean, based on that, yes, I'm always looking for ways of making a couple of bucks. No, you know, we should do that, actually. I don't know if
do
they're
you have
a little
them?
Bit –
Because I've in the past begged you for them, and you've always been like, maybe they're somewhere.
Yeah, no, I definitely know they're somewhere. I've saved everything. I don't have it organized in any fashion whatsoever. But occasionally we've played them, I feel like. Matt, haven't we played them occasionally? Yes? We have. We've played some.
You still do it?
No, I haven't. I mean, I hope to, but it's, you know, there's, I don't know, the right wing just, I'm a little bit bored. They're not coming out with, like, you know, a Shark's Tale being about, a gay, I don't know.
Have you not heard the word Benghazi?
I have heard the word Benghazi.
I mean, I would love to hear that call.
I know.
Sam Seder calling anyone to talk about Benghazi and just ask them questions about other firefights.
When they came out with the Benghazi watchdog stuff, it occurred to me. Like, at one point, they had actually, I think, just sort of branded the whole thing and had literally tried to patent it. The Benghazi watchdogs. That sort of fell apart for them, didn't it?
Was that the site that was like a GeoCities site? There was one website that like launched, like, we are the definitive, you know, citizen arm of Benghazi. And then you looked at it, and it literally was like –
Well, that's the problem is there were so many knockoff versions of the Benghazi watchdog.
No, that was – what Matt is referring to is the Lara Logan project that she was doing while she was off 60 Minutes.
What is she doing? Is she still around?
She's back.
Is she back? She's not in 60 Minutes.
Yes, she is.
What?
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Lost a little luster, but I think she's still doing, you know, maybe a Jane Goodall segment.
I don't understand. How do you not have any career implications for stuff like that?
Because I don't think I need to explain this to you, Sam, but credibility is not a huge issue these days.
The only person who I know who lost his job was basically because you made him lose his job. Who was that guy?
I will not accept that guilt.
Wait a second. Who was it? The guy on CNN, Rick Sanchez.
I can't recall. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, listen, I always said the way the metaphor I chose was he had a grenade in his mouth, and I kept during the interview trying to put the pin back in, but he wanted to explode himself.
Yes. But yeah. Is he still, what is he doing? Is he working down?
People often ask me what he's up to.
He's not calling you with a regular update?
Surprisingly, I don't get a Christmas card.
Well, now let me see if I recall. Now, we got to remind this. What was the context? You had asked him a question. He basically just said something like, you know, only Jews can get away with it. What was it he said? I don't want to mischaracterize.
He was going after Jon Stewart, which is weird. And he called Jon Stewart a bigot. And we started there, and it blew up when he basically said something to the effect of Jews run this place, and we were taping the show. It was live, actually. If we were taping it, maybe he'd still be working there. But no, I wouldn't have, because I wouldn't have edited that, obviously. But we were at CNN,
right,
Sam, when he said Jews run this place. We were live. You know, I was doing my SiriusXM show at the CNN Bureau in Atlanta because I was hosting a show at CNN at the time. And so that's why that happened, sadly.
Now,
it was sad.
The irony is that's one of the few places Jews don't run in the media, isn't it? Or do they run it over there, too?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up, Sam. I can't hear you.
Jews actually run this place that we're in, where I'm speaking from, and with an iron grip. But
is there a mezuzah outside your studio?
Oh, outside, inside, actually, just to get there's. I've got one attached right to the side of the microphone.
Well, that's good. What does that do for you?
I'm allowed to pass after I touch it and kiss it. That's actually what turns on the mic.
I just wanted to see if you could explain the purpose of the mezuzah.
Oh, yeah. It's the mezuzah. I like that. He's
got it.
He's playing off. They make him over at SiriusXM, of course. I totally
remember. No, I lived on the Upper West Side for 12 years.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, all right. So, wait a second. So, tell us about SiriusXM Insider. I don't know how many people have Sirius subscriptions. And I know that they first listen to this show and then they head over to SiriusXM. And I know that actually share – well, you and I definitely share a couple of listeners. I know that
from Twitter.
And
those listeners definitely prefer you. And here's how I know, because they always tell me how much better you are than me.
Really?
So
no.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if Kevin Cruz, this is one of these listeners, could marry you or marry me, there's no doubt about it. He would marry off
with
you.
That's funny, because I never got that impression, because I only see I see him, you know, he pops up into my Twitter feed talking about you. So, you know, maybe he does that for both of us.
Just to interject,
he's an agent. He's playing us against each other. But he's always telling me what you're doing. He's like, you know, Sam does this segment every week where he has libertarians call in and debates him, and it's great. And I'm like, well, yeah, guess what? I'm not as talented as Sam Cedar, okay? My whole skill set, and I'm not trying to shine you, my whole thing has always been to bring on guests and surround myself with producers who are smarter and funnier than me. My dad told me when I was a young man, make friends with the biggest kid in class. It's the only thing he ever told me in terms of advice, and I've been doing that my whole career.
Sam's following you on the producer's front.
What's that?
In terms of smarter and funnier producers.
Oh, there
absolutely.
You go. All right. Nice. We cut the mics, please. I got to say, you know, you always talk that game, but I've been on your program a couple of times, and I've listened to stuff, you know, when it leaks out of the firewall that you guys put up there at SiriusXM. And I got to say, I think that you are you have a very good balance between comedy and – but also, frankly, you have – and maybe I'm basing it on the CNN show a little bit too that you did – are very, I think, insightful when it comes to politics. I mean, you have very smart stuff. It's not fart machines over there. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's hard to make it, you know, smart and funny at the same time, whether it's a tweet or an hour-long segment or an entire radio show or channel. But that is the effort. You know, it's not the Daily Show. It's not Colbert. But it's, you know, it's somewhere in between that and NPR. And the way I've been describing this new channel, and I'm a big NPR fan. There's a lot of shows and people I like there. So I don't mean it in the pejorative. But this new channel is like NPR with a heartbeat or an edge or a personality. You know, I give my opinion. The other hosts will give their opinions. But we'll also be bringing on, you know, similar type guests and obviously similar type content and trying to have some fun while we're doing it. Not dissimilar to what you've always done. I mean, I used to be moving my car in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, listening to you. And we didn't know each other at that time. I was simply one of your fans. And I've always been. I mean, I still look at you like a senior, and I'm a freshman. And so to just be on your show and to have a compliment to me is really nice. And I'm not, you know, there's a lot of people that I definitely think I'm smarter and funnier than, but I wouldn't mention them. I'm only mentioning the people who I think are, you know, more talented than I am. And that's why we've got John Fugelsang, you know, on this new channel, and Dino Vidala is fantastic, the first Muslim American hosting a national radio show. That's a pretty cool thing.
He's going to be a little bit busy in the coming weeks, I have a feeling.
Sadly, he did four hits on cable news yesterday or the day before. Yeah, that's unfortunate. But yeah, no doubt. Because he's got to apologize.
Of course.
For hours. You know, he's got to apologize for all Muslim terrorism.
I want to get to that. I mean, Dean has been on this program, so of course John has too. And many times over the years I've talked to Dean. But let me ask you this question, because you and I do sort of similar stuff here. You opened for Colbert for years, right? For the show?
6 years, yeah, over 1,000 episodes.
So, I mean, this has always sort of frustrated me on some level, is that they had so many. I mean, Colbert to me was just sort of the pinnacle, you know, of that type.
The best of our generation, if not all time.
And, but it's, you know, one of the things that, like, it's frustrating not to have those resources to be able to do something like on that level. Do you know what I mean? I have felt that at times. Like, I would love to do that caliber of show every day on the radio or whatever it is now that I'm playing on. But you just don't have the production, you know, you don't have a staff of writers, you don't have all the production value. Has that ever occurred to you? I mean, has that been, you know, you came from the world of obviously from stand up. Your first show, I think, was stand up. That was incorporated into it, but in the title. But I mean, how have you dealt with that notion, with that idea?
Well, I haven't really. I mean, my show is still called Stand Up with Pete Dominic. I mean, I haven't really, you know, working so closely to Colbert, it never occurred to me to try it. Because, again, like I'm saying about you and other really talented people, it's like I don't know that I could do that level of comedy without, obviously, that staff of writers and so on. I mean, he had great, great writers, and so they all do. But, I mean, I don't know. And TV is not as interesting to me as radio is, and I'm just not that motivated by, you know, the money. I mean, I do my SiriusXM show from my home. And like you, you know, I'm a father. And so I really like being with my kids. I mean, that's my main, I don't have any friends, Sam. I mean, honestly, except for my old friends, I don't make new friends. I go to work, do the radio show, and I hang out with my daughter. So, you know, in seeing Colbert, who's got three kids, and granted, you know, 43 weeks a year, they got plenty of time off, but he worked his ass off, you know, 10, 12 hours every day. And I didn't really want that. It's, you know, how do you define success I define it by the amount of time I get to be with my family. And so that's, you know, I guess I'm just not that that ambitious that way. I don't know. Does that make any sense? Is that even close to an answer to what you asked me?
The only thing that is confusing to me is the part about being so – enjoying your family so much. That's the only part that – the parts of having no friends and just going from home to work.
Here's what comes up when you Google Sam Cedar, guys. Sam Cedar is an idiot. Sam Cedar Wikipedia. Sam Cedar fired. Sam Cedar show and Sam Cedar wife. And that's the most flattering one. And that's the one I'm clicking on right now. And I see no pictures of her.
What is it? What are you doing? Is he Googling this? I don't understand.
Who is Sam Cedar dating? Is a search that's been done?
What? Oh wow! Yeah. Who is
Look
Sam Cedar dating?
Sam Cedar's net worth.
Really? Wow! I'm curious to find that.
Why don't you help update that Wikipedia right now and tell us all what it is?
I'm gonna go dump it right now. It's I'm gonna go update that as we speak. So that's interesting. And why is it that radio is more interesting to you than television?
Well, I'll tell you, specifically at Sirius, you know, I'm not ratings driven. So that's one thing. And when I worked at CNN, it was always ratings driven.
People realize how intense that is. I mean, I see it, you know, over like, you know, in overnight television. Well, Air America to a certain extent, but, you know, even in – The ratings don't come out until really a 3-month period, you know, at each quarter, and it's a slow build. In cable television, it's literally you get the numbers the next morning, and people want to see it move by the next show you do.
And to be transparent, I mean, I hosted a show on CNN for 8 weeks, and you were one of my first and only guests because I only did it for 8 weeks. And to be transparent, no one ever talked to me about ratings. And when we had really good ratings, it was kind of an on-air pilot. But you kind of know, and I'm sure they talked to, you know, Anderson Cooper and Bill O'Reilly about them. I mean, O'Reilly, I think, gets them sent directly into his brain. But me, you know, you did know what you could and couldn't do. And I can't do an hour of health policy on CNN. So the thing about radio to me is that you can have a real conversation, a thoughtful conversation, and you can have a two-way, you know, you can take calls. I mean, I can have a call if the guy calls in like he did last week and says that his son died in Iraq. Well, that call is going to last 20 minutes.
Right.
I wasn't planning for that call today. I have a whole other agenda I was going to do. But guess what? Now we're having a real conversation about real life. And to me, that's something you can't do on television.
Yeah, I agree totally. I mean, that is one of the things that I think I miss more than anything else. I mean, we take calls on this program, but you have a universe out there where you're going to get people that you just don't really anticipate calling in, and that's one of the nice things I think about terrestrial radio or just I guess live. What do you call it? Cable, satellite cast or whatever it is. I mean, at this point, that's where the game is on satellite radio. There's not much happening on terrestrial as far as I can tell.
And terrestrial is still like TV, ratings driven. And so on terrestrial radio, I've got to create a conflict. I've got to keep people, you know, I've got to sell tons of advertising. And
and
it's just I don't have that pressure here. And I don't know how much it would change if I did my show. But, you know, what we're doing every day, for some reason, people really like it. And it's because, you know, it's not bullshit. It's not contrived. I don't make up arguments today and try to get, you know, people to bait people and argue with them and stuff. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that per se, but I don't think we're going to be in terms of entertainment for sure, but we're not learning something from that. You know, I mean, I did a show yesterday, Jay Thomas's show here, and we ended up arguing the whole time and it ended up, maybe it was entertaining, but I'm not sure anybody learned anything.
And Jay Thomas, what was the argument about?
Politics.
My problem is I love to argue. I just really
yeah,
I
me
love
too.
To argue.
Me too. We argue. Don't get me wrong, Sam. You know, and I'm not as good as you are, for sure. But there's plenty of argument. I lose it on people, callers, and even guests every once in a while. But I just try to have, like, intellectuals, you know, experts right. coming on, the issues to come on. That's the main thing we're doing. I'm not trying to argue, but plenty of people call in and you know, call me an eco-freak, et cetera.
An eco-freak?
I'm a big militant environmentalist. Militant is not
really,
right, but I that's my thing. One of my things.
Why? Are you worried that that the planet's going to burn up, and that it's your kids.
Not while
right?
I'm here, but right. for my kids. Right. And you know, to me, it's also a spiritual thing. Like the last 2 years, I kind of found something. And it's nature, and I love it. I grew up with it, and then I lived in New York and lost it, and now I live in the burbs, and I love it again, and my kids having kids and doing things. And so, you know, I do a lot of activism on that and for women's issues and anti-poverty and anti-racism and stuff. But environmentalism, to me, is the thing that I personally connect the most with.
And you've been pretty good about, like, sort of not getting – branded as a wild-eyed liberal on some level, right? I mean, I listen to every, you know, when I listen to you, all the to the times that I've listened to you, your politics and my politics, I think, are very similar. I mean, I think you have.
I don't know what we would disagree on.
I don't
It'd be
either.
Interesting
frankly.
To find out. Yeah,
But
I mean, you're very pro. Benghazi, I think.
I'm totally pro Benghazi.
Yeah. I don't know what that even means.
No.
I mean, do you love? You've always loved that city.
I've always been very pro Benghazi. I wanted the Olympics, the 2024 Olympics.
What do you think about guns?
Boston.
Actually, I don't know where you are on some issues. Like, where are you? Like, what do you think about like the Second Amendment and stuff and guns?
I mean, I think the Second Amendment is misinterpreted. I don't really have a problem with people hunting, frankly, and maybe that's because of the time that. You know, I was living upstate. A lot of the people I was friends with, you know, they would hunt. But I also think that, you know, there's a real problem in this country with the amount of guns and the nature of the guns. So I'm, you know, I'm not against the SAFE Act in New York, let's say. I think that's, you know, people complain about that. It's they're being a little babyish.
I think what you were saying earlier about like my branding, I like that you think that that's your perception. That's always been my effort. But I think part of it is I truly don't hate, you know, the craziest wild-eyed right winger. I truly want to know where he and she is coming from. And I know, and I also am friends. I can be pretty good friends with people who share a very different set of values on the issues because I think that we really aren't that different. And I think that I could meet a guy who's, you know, disagrees with me on every single important issue, but I would be more than happy to have watch my kid or help me build a deck or something because, you know, my favorite people are the people that are different from me in terms of just spending time with them and learning about them. And often, you know, I really don't believe, and maybe you disagree, that we're that much different in many ways. I think that some people are frankly misinformed and ignorant, and I'm one of them on many issues, but I don't know. I like learning about new people, and I just don't think that I have to hate someone because we disagree on, you know, women's rights or something. I don't know.
I feel very comfortable with conservatives working for me in terms of like babysitting the child or doing the deck. That I feel comfortable with. Those are the two examples you give. Like, I'm perfectly willing to have them work for me.
Would you hire them to produce your show? Like somebody who disagrees with you completely, or do you?
Oh,
even
you know what? I nearly did that at one point. I mean, if I had enough of the only reason why I didn't do that, and I came very close a couple of years ago. The only reason why I didn't do that was because I thought that it would become too distracting. Like that I
right.
would be I cannot help myself. And I am not as of generous spirit as you are, to be honest. I mean,
right.
I do genuinely admire your ability to do that. I hit
part
a wall.
Of it though, part I hit of a wall. It though, Sam, probably has to do with honestly, if I'm going to, you know, put myself on the couch, my comedian, stand-up comedian kind of insecurity baggage of wanting everybody to like me. You know, it's like, I don't, even if I hate them, I actually still want them to like me.
Yeah, I have a problem.
Which is unhealthy.
I don't know if that's unhealthy. I think that's also very helpful. I have a problem where I really feel it's really important that people know that I specifically don't like them. And not only is that a problem, like, you know,
what I like about you.
Some people can actually, like, make that work for them. Because they'll do it in a big way, but you know, and they'll announce across the table like, "I don't like you." They will maximize the value of that confrontation. What I will do is I'll just go up to them. I'll sit up next to them. I just want you to know, just between you and I really don't like you.
Have you, Sam?
What's that?
Have you?
Have I what?
Ever done that?
Oh, not specifically. Well, yes, I have done that, but not.
Who? Names?
Oh, God. I mean, I've said it to bosses. I mean, for God's sakes. I mean, in Air America, I think there was at least one or two people I said that to.
Awesome.
I mean, and the problem is that I don't get any value out of it. In fact, it generally is a problem. And I've also found that those people tend to do very well in their careers and find themselves in a position to want to stop me from going to different places and whatnot. But we don't have to get into it.
You have burnt the bridges of people who can in the future. You have defined burning bridges.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing. At the time, it didn't look like bridges.
Who do you hate the most? And I'll answer this question. Who do you – because I really don't – again, I don't love the word hate because I could probably find something I liked about him. But who do you think it does the most damage, like commentator-wise, somebody who has the biggest audience?
Wow. Well, I mean – you know, the funny thing is that, like, in general, I feel like it's inappropriate for me to say that about people in public. That's the problem.
Really?
I tend to say it less. But
because you don't want to give them attention?
No. I just think it's rude. I just think it's more polite to say it to them quietly. But I guess in terms of commentators, like, I don't know now that I feel. You know, back in the day, I felt like guys like Thomas Friedman were the most damaging because for me, Thomas Friedman was a guy who I saw a lot of like liberals or left of center people cite when it came to going into Iraq. And so I felt he was the most, you know, incredibly damaging in that respect. And then, you know, guys like Limbaugh and Hannity, I think they're insane. I don't particularly like them. I find them amusing. And it's the people who, you know, the Alan Simpsons, I find really repugnant.
People that are really taken seriously by the intelligentsia because of the damage that they potentially
Absolutely.
Can do. That's an interesting answer.
Absolutely.
Mine is John Stewart because he's a bigot.
Of course. Of course it is.
I think it's Hannity, though, because of how large his audience is and how he purposely misleads in terms of editing audio and video, you know, the president or, you know, and he's not consistent. And I feel like people, because what you're saying with like Alan Simpson and Tom Friedman is really interesting, but I think the people who are the most, you know, the people I disrespect the most are the people, and there's a lot of people certainly on the left that do this as well, that say things that they don't mean.
Oh, Sean Hannity is an unmitigated liar. I mean, just an unmitigated liar, and he knows it. He is
– You know he's a black belt, right?
A black belt in karate?
I think he is a I think he's a black belt. Oh, I don't know what belt he is, but he's a dangerous weapon.
I had no idea.
Yeah, be careful.
He came in. We had him on the show early on, Janine and I did, because he so desperately wanted Janine on back in the day because it, you know, it would be a big boost to his ratings because he got to beat up on her. And
sure.
So she leveraged that. He came into our studio. We were too new to really go after him. But I did ask him and try and make him state whether or not he thought we were living in end times. And it got him very angry. I enjoyed
it. Do you have that? Please tell me you have that archive.
Oh, it's got to be somewhere.
I will tweet that out immediately.
Oh, I don't have it at my – somebody's got to have it somewhere. I mean, I don't know
Find
where
that.
The old –
That's gold. What did he say? Do you remember?
When the morons sold off Air America, they literally sold the server – the hard drive that had all of the audio archives.
Oh, my dear Lord.
And somebody just erased it. I mean, they sold it as a piece of hardware without copying it.
That's why I don't want to tell anybody the world that about my attic, because there's boxes of CDs of everything I've ever said.
Of course. Of course. And, you know,
for my future presidential run.
Right. Indeed. Well, that's what the hope is, right? That after you pass, your kids go up there and spend
six to eight months
listening to every word you ever said. And you know what they're going to do, right?
Nothing.
They're just going to chuck it. What's this round, shiny thing?
I have letters written to them. They won't even read them.
Oh, that's smart.
They're like, we had enough of you.
I want to do that. All right. Well, let's get to the bottom line here. Now, every Friday, I convince myself that I'm going to be able to watch a movie over the weekend. That is now obviously streaming. You go through the same thing. How many kids do you have? One or two kids?
I have two daughters, 9 and 7. And I do the same thing you do.
We can't.
And last week I watched two: one Friday, one Saturday.
Frozen and Parent Trap.
Believe it or not, I've avoided Frozen.
Wow.
But you've seen Parent Trap. My daughter saw it like three times.
You've seen Parent Trap.
Nope.
Wait a second. What do? Your daughters don't make you watch movies with them?
I turn it on and I usually walk out.
You know what?
I don't understand what you're talking about. I read books to them and with them, but I don't watch their awful, awful programming.
Oh, man, you got it made. That's why you have two daughters. They're 9 and 7. My daughter's 9.
My dad was watching Dolphin Tale.
I saw that.
With my daughters.
Saw
and I walked in and I started making fun of this. I go, oh, my God, like out loud, you know. Oh, my God, this is the worst writing I've ever seen on any program, much less a kids program. And my dad snapped at me. He goes, if you don't like it, you can leave. And he wasn't saying that I was interrupting the girls and stuff. He's a huge Harry Connick fan.
Was he tearing up? Was he tearing up? Because it's very
–
there's a moment like I think – I can tell you. Maybe I'm thinking of Dolphin –
I haven't seen him tear up like that since Field of Dreams.
I think I might be thinking of Dolphin Tale too. Is this the one where she goes to where she goes off
to
college?
I don't know who you're asking, Sam. I don't know who you're asking. I don't know how you think you're going to get an answer.
You are so lucky. And so what do you do when your two daughters are watching? They can watch the same movie, right? Because they're basically the same age, 9 and 7.
Yes, accurate.
Son of a bitch. God, I resent that. God, I resent that.
I had a vasectomy too.
Oh, you know what? I'll tell you something. That's been suggested to me on multiple occasions. I can't even
contemplate.
Feels
like I orgasm when I urinate.
I can't. What?
Not
really?
Gonna lie.
Really?
Get it. Get it and go to Dr. Chang. His little thing, you put them there.
No. Are you serious?
No.
Okay.
But it does feel good.
No, not gonna. Can't even contemplate it. Can't even contemplate anything happening down there.
Yeah, I recorded myself going out and the anesthesia.
You know what? I did that coming out of my anesthesia for a colonoscopy. I'm in for another one next week. We played it on that Marin show. Yeah, no, I do it. I do it on a weekly basis.
Not only does Sam do the
way
the
I drive my
movie
YouTube numbers
every week, it's a colonoscopy. All right, so what am I supposed to do? Tell you the movie?
Yeah, what movie? So your daughters are watching one movie. What do you watch another movie with your wife? Do you go in and watch a different one?
We rarely watch movies together, but my kids go to bed, and then that's when I turn on Daddy Time. And last week, I did the thing. You know, I usually will rent, but sometimes they get me. They get me with the buy because I can't wait two more weeks to rent.
Right.
And I
am on iTunes or Amazon,
yeah,
right?
Okay. iTunes or on demand or right. Amazon, yeah. And I get I'm a huge Brad Pitt fan. And so his new movie Fury that's just out on I bought it for $17.
Jesus. Was it good?
Pretty good.
Not great.
I like war films.
I like war films too.
And I'll see anything Shia LaBeouf is in. Actually, that's the first thing I've ever seen him in. But it was good. I liked it a lot.
All right, put it tonally. Is it sort of like what's that one with Kelly's Heroes? Do you know that one?
I don't remember that, but yeah.
Kelly's Heroes with Eastwood, Telly Savalas, Donald Sutherland, Don Rickles. Do you not remember that movie?
Yeah, it's nothing like that. It's certainly not a lot of laugh lines.
Okay. All right. So it's not like, what's the one that Spielberg did with Damon? The Ryan.
Funny, Saving Private Ryan.
It's
more like that.
That gets a little bit. I like the one that Malick did that came out at the same time. Within Red Line. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Yep.
So where is it on that spectrum?
Somewhere in between there. I don't think it'll go down as one of the great war films necessarily, but it was great. It was really well done, well written, well acted, and it showed a time. It covered a time that you don't see where the Germans were losing for sure, but it was they were trying to hold their ground in Germany, and it talked. You know, you showed how you know tanks work. I'd never seen a movie about a tank except for Tank. Remember that?
I didn't see
James
that.
James Garner. I don't know why you hate America, but you should see that movie.
I guess so. I mean, a big James Garner fan, but Tank, I missed.
I don't even know if he's in it. I'm IMDb-ing it right now. Tank. So that's my selection.
All right. Fury. All right. So noted. All right. So what channel, there are times where I rent a car, I get in there, there's Sirius XM, and I don't know what channel to listen to. Now I'm going to listen to Insight. What channel is it? Is it a number?
I appreciate it very much, the plug. Sirius XM 121, starting on Monday, it'll be called Insight.
Sweet. And yep. you're still doing the morning show or you're doing the evening show?
9 to noon, replay at 10 p.m.
You've had more shows, I think, on Sirius XM, well, almost, than I did on Air America, almost.
More channels and more time slots, but you know, it was never right. It was never right fit. That's why I wanted to make this channel, and so I'm now very proud of this brand, and hopefully maybe someday you'll decide to do something here. But, you know, it's a pretty exciting place to be, so.
Well, congratulations.
We'll see what happens.
Very happy.
Thank you
for
very
you.
Much, man. And I appreciate you having me on. And I'm a big fan of your podcast. And I mention you often.
Oh, well, thank you.
And you know that. I mean, I've always wanted you to be involved with everything I've ever done. So.
Well, that's very kind. Pete, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Sam Cedar.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Wow. We're going to have to do, like, I don't know. We're going to do, like, a 7-hour show so that we actually make the free show seem smaller. Crazy.
It's unbelievable.
We just gave an entire free show. And things are going to change, folks. Believe me. Things are going to change. It's not going to be like this forever where you get the free Friday show. I know I keep threatening that.
Just become a member.
Yeah.
And the stress
Come on, folks.
Will just
support
dissipate.
The show.
Just join the show.
Maybe we should even call it become a member. Become a supporter of the program.
Stop being a leech.
Oh, there you
go. A little more aggressive with it.
Yeah. That's all right. I mean, the freeloaders, the freeloaders.
The leeches.
Wow. Wow. Michael said
that. Good cop, bad cop, Sam.
Oh, yeah, right. Michael, don't say that. That's not, folks, I'm going to try and get him not to call you a leech, but you got to work with me here. Head over to join the majority report.
Cockroaches. Make it like a Scarface thing.
What are we going to do? So we will do definitely at least members only show today. Do we have a song by Jimmy Reefer Cake?
Oh,
yeah.
He was a genuine fan of yours.
Jimmy Reefer Cake.
No, he is not. I mean, Pete is. I don't think Jimmy Reaver Cake is nearly the type of fan of yours that Pete is.
But, you know, Pete's show, I've been on Pete's show, and I got to say, like, it's very hard to find a show, I think, that does, that is, he's the real deal. I mean, he definitely has some very good policy-oriented people on there, and he also has, like, tolerance for, you know, Will Cain's a nice guy, and John Avalon, I'm sure, is a nice guy, but he's got a little bit more patience than I have for those guys. I mean, Will, I worked with a little bit at CNN. Do we have the Jimmy Reaver Cake song?
So, yeah.
Sent it so long ago.
It was a while ago.
It's almost as one of those things that you'd actually have to prepare before the show.
Red Line was a very good movie.
That's right.
Unbelievable. You see the worker solidarity here?
All right, let me check.
Trying to cover Matt.
Yeah, I know. This is pretty.
Trying to cover Matt. I'm trying to help him out.
It's not going over that well. Let's try this. I'm going to call into the phones. We'll take maybe a phone call before we get to, or we'll take a couple IMs. Bush and Chains as the Sheeple Dem Uber. For those people who don't have experience, Bush and Chains on the IM, because you're not a member. You're missing something. Bush and Chains is there to attack me. His politics are a little bit, I don't know if they're
sometimes
to the left.
Bush and Chains tweets me great reggae, and I just wanted to thank him.
Oh, there you go.
Some great stuff.
Bush and Chains
week.
As the Sheeple Dem Uber voters have swallowed econ lies whole. Today's numbers show how stupid you have to be to tout Obama's BS propaganda as anything close to reality. Labor participation rate drops to a fresh 38-year low. Record 92.9 million Americans not in labor force. It's almost as if our labor force was aging. And there was sort of like a baby boom at one point, and now they're leaving the labor force, which is not to say that we don't have a problem with jobs in this country. But I'm just saying that it's a little bit too facile to say that. And we also have wages that have gone down. Bush and Chain says you welcome Brooksy. Former libertarian Taibbi wrote on the Charlie issue that obviously newspapers are obligated to post the cartoons since they are central to the event and story. Not doing so makes no sense editorially unless they're cowering to the terrorists. I don't see how that's the case. I mean, you know what else makes is central to the story is the shooting, right? But you'll see, like in the video that they put out, it won't put. I mean, think about the ISIS beheadings. People don't see the beheadings.
He's got it.
Taibbi wrote on the Charlie issue. Okay. I don't agree with Taibbi in that respect. All right, let's play the Jimmy Reaver Cake song.
The Jimmy Reaver Cake song, yes. It's called I Write the Songs.
Okay, now this is from last year, right?
He sent this December 29th, 2014.
Okay, so we're a little bit, maybe week and a half behind Jimmy's mood, but here it is.
You know, this isn't that easy. I really, really need some help. So please, help me. I play guitar. I'm trying hard. I'm just singing what I feel is true in my heart. I'm not saying that I got all the answers, but legalizing weed is where I'd start. And we must stand together and not let them break us apart. I write the song at allthehypocrisy.com. You know we'll never see the truth with the TV news blocking our eyes. If the news is that we lose Joe 30-pack, and I will tell you why. 'Cause the internet is full of fakers, but we deal in truth.
All right, well, I mean, that's a little bit long for this part of the show, but what a beautiful song.
It's very nice.
We'll post. Can we post a link to it?
Jimmy, send the link, because I know you want to promote all the hypocrisy, so send the link with that.
I'm sure, yeah, we'll still go onto his site and see if we can get a link to it, and we will post a link for the whole song. But very pretty. He should be doing love songs. That's like a nice love song, but it was to his website.
Well, it's his true love.
What's the old Woody Allen joke? It was like, don't knock masturbation, it's sex with someone I love.
Yes. All right. Well, let's head into the better half of the program. And, yeah, I want to jump in. It's, I didn't realize. Like 1:35. Let's go right in. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Folks, don't forget, you can become a member, a supporter of the program. Join the Majority Report. That's why we should do this. SupportTheMajorityReport.com. JoinTheMajorityReport.com. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code, get 10% off. Click on our Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com. See you in the better half.